Hello, good evening, and welcome to Do You Expect Us to Talk? Or, you know, it could be good morning, depending on what time you listen to it, but hey-o.
Do you think there's people listening to this in the morning somewhere really offended because you said good evening, and they're like, what about us, you thoughtless bastard?
It's lunchtime, what do you want about?
I don't think really offended.
Where it's ahead of us.
Maybe rolling their eyes of, like, maybe it's some mild tutting, maybe.
Yeah. Mild tutting? That's like a revolution in the UK, mild tutting. They'll be on the streets showing disapproval.
You know somebody's really irate when they tut at you?
Hands on waist and doing, like, breathing out behind people. You know, where you go, oh.
Yeah. Shit, yeah, bit of head shaking. Showing signs of disapproval. Yeah,
face palm. It's
getting out of hand. So, yeah, episode 240, Chris, carry on.
Yeah, it's episode. Oh, thank you for cueing me in. Yes, it's Do You Expect to Talk Book Club this time. We are returning to Fleming, not necessarily the films themselves, but the novels, which up to
you
this
mean
point,
Pontus Fleming, the village in Devon.
Yes.
Let's go there.
Yes, I didn't know that existed, to be fair. So, like,
yeah, but it's probably not in Devon. I've probably fucked that up. Hang on, don't worry about it. I'll look it up. I should have had it ready, but it's Fleming, obviously.
And we will inform your listeners on the day's findings.
Oh, it's in Cornwall. Sorry, it's near Saltash. It's right by. Oh, sorry, listeners.
Well, you know, we want to be truthful, don't we? On these.
Sorry about
that.
We've
got to get our facts straight, you know. Got to make sure they're fun. I've got to make sure they're correct, you know.
All right. I'm embarrassed enough. Don't rub it in.
Sorry, Dave.
So anyway, as you know, my name's Chris, and with us is Dave and Becca.
Hello.
Good evening, folks.
As always. So yeah. So today, we are discussing the first James Bond novel, Casino Royale. And as a newbie, even though I'm a lifelong fan of the films, I've never read the novels, so this is a first one for me. But obviously, you guys have actually much more acquainted with the novels than I have.
Yeah, I mean, in my case, if I quickly go first, if I had to estimate, I've read this four or five times. So I would say, much like with the films, big Bond novel fans will have read this probably more times than that. I've read it more than any other book in the series, simply because it goes first. So when you do this, I think I'll reread Bond, and then you read Casino Royale and forget to go any further or stall on one of the next ones. So I would estimate, I read it in about 97, something like that. So I was in my 20s by the time I read it. I think I was 20. And I read them all about, I lose track of time. It's since we've been running. I read them all a few years ago anyway. And I made sure I got all the ones I hadn't previously read. I had some of them on Kindle. I had some of them on audiobook. I think I've got nearly all of them on audiobook now. And did a mixture with them, you know, listened to a few, read a few. With some of them, I read bits and then sort of went to where in the book I got to reading and listened to a bit. And I read it again this time. So, yeah, like I say, probably about four or five times, possibly more, I've read it. Wouldn't say I was an expert on it by any stretch of the imagination. The majority of Fleming, as we'll discuss, I've read once each. I think all of the sort of first half I've read more than that, certainly up to something like From Russia With Love, Dr. No, I've read them all at least twice. Moonraker, I've probably read, you know, three times or so. But yeah, this is the book I probably know best. It's not my favourite. It's among my favourites. It's in the sort of top four or five, probably. We'll sort of reveal my favourite when I get there. I probably already have on podcasts in the past. Doesn't quite match my favourite film, but both of my favourite books are among my top few films. And yeah, Casino Royale's a good book. It's a very... What I think it does better than any of the other books is its finish. I think it really gains momentum towards the end and really wants you leaving more. But that's me with it. What about you, Becca?
Yeah, So, our history with the books and the films is a little bit different. I think we probably discussed it way back when we started reviewing Bond on this podcast, so I might not go through it again. Yeah, so I picked this book when I was sort of like getting into Bond, that sort of thing. it's one of those things where, you know, all the references, especially like the 50s or 60s references, kind of go over your head a little bit when you're reading this when you're a little bit younger. It's probably not something that you learn about when until you grow up and become a bit more worldly wise, I guess. Yeah, it's probably one of my favorite books of all time. I'm just saying that 'cause it's a Bond book. But like for me, like I'm just gonna go ahead and say it now. Like one of the opening to this book, like the scent and smoke and sweats of a casino are nauseating at 3 in the morning. Like I think it's up there with one of those. You know, it's the best of times. It was the worst of times. You know, a woman in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a man in possession of a fortune must be in want of a wife. You know, it's one of the greatest literary openings, I feel. Yeah, sort of came to it. You know, sort of while I was getting into Bond, that sort of thing. You know, obviously discovered the rest of the Fleming oeuvre. I think for me, it's probably up there with my favourites, along with like Moonraker, Majesties. You know, so it's up there with the, you know, the big hitters, really. Not just in terms of Bond, but probably like in my sort of top novels of all time, definitely. The film and the book kind of depart at various stages. It's quite an interesting adaptation. And it's, you know, it's great to kind of see that it's been reissued in the anniversary year, which is really, really cool. But yeah, and I enjoy this novel quite a lot. I find myself going back to them in both Bond books and the films many times throughout the year. So it's one that I come back to. So yeah, looking forward to getting stuck into it.
Yeah, so some basic differences and basic similarities. Well, first off, the anniversary Becca refers to is it's 70 years old this year. I think if Ian Fleming, if he'd still been alive, would have turned 115 this year.
Wow.
I think it was his centenary in 2008, wasn't it? Where you got the
Yes.
Sebastian Faulks book.
Yep. Yeah,
Yeah.
that was the anniversary novel.
A Devil May Care. Yeah.
Yep, I believe so.
I always go to say Devil May Cry, but that's a video game, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's about
Anyway,
vampires.
when I reread the books now, I tend to put the continuation novels that are in chronological order with it in with it. I don't love many of the continuation novels, but I do really like I do like the ones we've had in the last few years. And I've just blanked on his name forever and a day.
Anthony
Anthony
Horowitz.
Horowitz.
Anthony Horowitz. I should know that name. I just blanked for a
Oh, he's
moment.
great.
He's done three now, and I've got one of them. I've sort of not got to, and I think it's because it's right at the end. The one he's just released is right at the end of the timeline. The first one he produced, Trigger Mortis, was a couple of weeks set a couple of weeks after Goldfinger. He's with Pussy Galore at the start of the film, or the start of the book, sorry. And then he did one about his recruitment into the 00 section, and it is a section. It's not a program. Whatever Sam Mendes did, it's not a program. It's a section.
Yeah, he called it a double A program. It's like,
I know it's not a program.
it's a double
Anyway,
A section.
it is, but
Yes, yeah, it's not the Bourne films. It's not like
no,
Blackbriar or
I know it's not. Yeah, it's not a.
Treadstone or something like that. It's like
It's
a,
not a
what's the
time
company?
sensitive project or something. It's a department. But
Yeah,
anyway, so
splitting hairs.
the film does his sort of recruitment and his two kills that give him the 00, which is a 00 as in the letters of the alphabet in the books. It's not 00, but
No, because
anyway,
he's called 007, isn't he?
it's 007. But I mean, it's just a difference. It doesn't matter. It seems to refer to the same thing, although you could be very pedantic on reading it. It is two murders, one from distance, one in close, very like in the film, but they're different. Or one is messy and one is clean. But in the book, one is literally at distance, and we'll get to it. But it is saying about it's killing in cold blood. So the book could be read. So I'm going to do that by mistake a few times. The book could be read to mean it's the second kill that gives him the 00, not that it's 10 for each murder, but that's splitting hairs. That book tells you about how he gets recruited in. The book starts with like 007 is dead, but it's his predecessor, and it's about them sort of settling on this guy that they were sort of grooming to replace or be the next one in, and just, you know, him being called in his first case, in the south of France, actually. In that case, there are a couple of continuity errors, like the cigarettes he smokes in Casino Royale, he's been smoking for about 20 years, but you get the origin of those in a book that's only set a few months before. So there are some errors, but it does flow really nicely into this. So I do put the sort of, so in my head, it's sort of not the first Bond book now because I put the other one in because it fits so well. But it is obviously the first novel. As we talked about when we did the film, the reason it wasn't the there was rights issues around adapting it, but also it was the fact that Dr. No was seen as a sort of good self-contained, relatively you can control costs on it. They thought it was a bit more cinematic than a card game, and lots of reasons they went with Dr. No. This was adapted for television a year later with Card Sense Jimmy Bond, Barry Lyndon,
Starring Peter Lorre.
and Valerie Math. Peter Lorre is actually probably a lot closer than Mads Mikkelsen from to the book description
He's
of.
really good. He's maybe a bit stereotyped, but he's really good.
And the book starts. We'll go through the book in a minute, but that first line that but she likened it to Pride and Prejudice, which
Pride and Prejudice and also
I
Telly Two
can't hear
Cities.
without thinking of Black Books now,
No.
where Danny goes, "In want of a wife." Right? They had to teach him to read in 3 days, a bloodthirsty gangster. But anyway, that's another story. But yeah, if you can get past the fact it was written part co-written with Graham Linehan, that episode's very, very funny. So the book starts in Casino Royale. It starts at the casino with them preparing for the game and Bond sort of getting his eye in. And then we go back a couple of weeks to like his recruitment into this job. So it is much more focused with a little bit of backstory on him getting to the casino, meeting Matisse as he is in the book.
Not Mathis.
Not
Mathis.
Mathis.
I
Well,
reckon Mathis is really your friend, Mathis.
it made me smile actually, because in Quantum of Solace, because he's called Mathis, right? Which, if you thought about it for a second, you'd realize it should be Matisse and it's French.
Yeah.
But of course, it's played by an Italian, so you don't even think about it. But in Quantum of Solace, he said, "Is that a cover name?" And he said, "It's not a very good one, is it?" And I think,
And we
well,
don't
it's
know
not,
anything
is
more
it?
about it, but Mathis does pop up, and I think he pops up in some of the, I want to say, the Raymond Benson continuation novels as well.
I don't
So
remember
it's,
that.
he
I
proves
have
to
read
be
them.
quite a, even though he's kind of written off, I feel, a little bit in Quantum, I kind of feel like he's quite a staunch ally of
What is
Bond.
it? What is he in this book? He's kind of like local. Is he police
He's
or
kind of like local, yeah. He's deuxième, I can't, I don't do
deuxième
French
bureau?
actually. Yeah, so he's basically
The
kind of like
12th bureau.
maybe like a branch of like French special services or something, for example.
It might be
My
something
French is
more like
terrible, I do
special branch.
apologize.
Okay, well, that's
He's basically kind of like Bond's contact, and so
is the
obviously you've got
second
Felix from the
bureau, isn't it?
CIA, and you've got Matisse from,
It's external military intelligence agency, so it is effectively like MI6. Okay, but it's their own one, whereas Bond is actually going off intelligence from the head of station S. Okay, so just very, very quickly then, the few differences before we go into the book. Bond is a first time. It is very like the Craig version in that he is a new recruit to this particular section, but he's a veteran agent. He's in his mid-30s, similar to Craig. Craig was 37 casting and filming, 38 on release. He's physically described very different, very sl much slimmer, cold, brutal eyes, a bit of a sort of scar on one eye. He does have the comma of hair that you only ever really see in GoldenEye. He is, this is
Yeah, a little
Royal.
bit with Connery as well, but never mind.
Yeah,
Anyway, that's literally
well.
splitting hairs. Carry on.
Connery is extremely close, to be honest. People always talk about Dalton, but like obviously Connery got to play some of the more faithful adaptations, and he does play it with this sort of slight cold detachment that women are a bit disposable to him. There are some strong similarities, but of course it's not an exact match. I mean, I always often think of somebody like Jason Isaacs, but anyway, just very quick, some quick differences on
I
character
always
and
thought
plot.
Michael Fassbender for while
Yeah,
reading and listening
same.
to this. I
He
was
would have been superb around the time of sort of First Class or something,
X-Men, yeah.
because he's about my age and he'd have been right then. But there you go. And obviously we do get his audition scene effectively in the Argentina sequence in X-Men First Class. But anyway, so the story is nearly all set in this area, Royal-les-Eaux, which is a spa town, and it's just up the road from like Dieppe. And I think, and it's very, it's in Normandy basically, so it is referred to as not that far from London. It's just across the water. Bond is there effectively, his cover is through Jamaica because he knows Jamaica, which again makes it feel like a sequel to Doctor No, but it isn't. We haven't had Doctor No yet, but it sets up that the guy knows Jamaica, and all the contact is through like an agent that is undercover on the pictures desk of the like local newspaper there.
Was that all a bit like Fleming talking about himself, though, a little bit?
Yeah, this is all Fleming. This book, we'll go on to Fleming in a minute, and maybe Becca might be able to tell us a little bit more about him because she knows a bit more biographically. But I've always felt Bond is what Fleming would have liked to have been. And he wrote this when he was about to sort of enter into a marriage with a previously married woman who was a mistress of his, who wasn't a particularly warm character, didn't like his writing, and I get the impression he didn't particularly want to marry her. So the idea he went and wrote this sort of womanizing agent, you know, you can understand it. But he did
Yeah,
have.
a bit of wish fulfillment, really,
Yeah.
wasn't it? It's kind of like the life. Obviously, it was partly informed by his own life and like naval intelligence and things like that.
So.
But yeah, partly kind of like how he wished he could be, and obviously it contains a lot of attitudes and sentiments that are prevalent and obviously don't make them right, but they're prevalent and you know popular at the time, unfortunately. But no, yeah, I would largely agree. It was pretty much. I mean, they're wonderful Fleming biographies out there you can read, and there's a new one out just this year by
I
Nicholas
need to
Shakespeare.
read one. I never have. I don't know that much about him except what you get in like Bond extras and what you pick up in pop culture.
Definitely.
I do think when things like To Kill a Mockingbird were being written in this era, I still think his attitudes were something of an outlier. I still think he was like very much upper class British. I
Oh
don't
no, of
think,
course, yeah, definitely.
you know,
Which
I
sort of
think.
things that there were sort of generally sort of prevalent at the time, but yeah, he's very much of the upper echelons for sure.
But let's just quickly run through the differences and similarities. So again, Bond's first mission. Again, Le Chiffre. Le Chiffre is an asthmatic, as in the film, but he's very fat and walks with a cane. He's much more, although Le Chiffre in the film has a girlfriend, this Le Chiffre is very much a womanizer and a bit disgusting with it. You get that with a lot of the description of Bond villains. They're a little bit, they make your skin crawl a bit. And instead of losing his job, his money, he's lost Soviet money because he's basically, he's it's a union, isn't it? He's like paymaster of a union in Eastern
Yeah,
France
it's
that
the
is basically
French
Soviet.
Communist Trade Party
So
trade union.
it's basically Soviet money, and he's lost it. And what they can't decide from the backstory, which we'll go on to the book structure in a minute, because I think it's masterful. But we find out his backstory, and he's lost it investing in basically brothels in northern France.
Investing the wrong
Now,
way.
they've said that the problem is they can't tell whether he's invested in it as a way to make money, genuinely speculate to accumulate, or is it just because he's so sex obsessed? And just after that, a law comes in France that basically makes that tightens that cracks down immensely on both. Brothels and pornography. So suddenly he's invested a load of Soviet money, Smersh money, if you like. And Smersh is kind of, it's a little bit like the KGB, but it's to do with weeding out dissidents in your own
Death
country.
to spies,
Yeah,
smirch, beyond
yeah.
them.
So double agents and that sort of thing. And he's basically lost the money. So he's now desperate to save his life by winning it back, but it's not lost in the same manner. Bond has gone there because they see an opportunity to bankrupt him. So again, best gambler in the service is him. So they've sent him there to do very much the same. There's no third act in Venice. His time with Vesper after the game, because we'll assume that everybody here knows that Bond wins after previously losing, and he goes off with Vesper, and her past catches up with her. He catches up with it. He's in the. He stays in the town, or like a little village outside, and it's like a farmhouse or something. So it's none of this world travel. He stays in the immediate area with her for a while, and those are largely the differences. So the film starts in the casino, and then we go back to how Bond is tasked with it, and also the next chapter is M reading the dossier on both Le Chiffre and on Smersh. So the film sets us up for what we're going to see, and then gives us backstory on the main antagonist of many of the Bond films, Smersh, which is effectively what Spectre becomes in the films. We get Spectre in the books, but only in a trilogy that we'll talk about in a bit.
And you, then you hear from him and from Richard Fudd, didn't you, when he's kind of, Grant's explaining his plan, and he's like, Smersh? And he's like, Smersh, Spectre, and, you know. Yeah. And then obviously later on in Living Daylights, we get Smersh, Bjornum.
Yeah, which is why the Living Daylights is such a Fleming callback, really.
Yes.
Quite aside from using. So that's my sort of setup, really. What do we want to talk about first, then? I suppose we can just talk a little bit. I've just talked about Le Chiffre. Becca, how is Felix Leiter different than the Daniel Craig iteration that you can remember?
Well, he's English, isn't he?
No, he's Texan, isn't he?
Texan, I was going to say, in the 1950s TV version, you've got like American cartoons Jimmy Bond, and you've got
British.
Yeah, you've got British.
Clarence Light.
I was like, what's going on there? Yeah, he's Texan, kind of like broad, you know, kind of broad accent, that sort of thing. It sounds really weird, even though I think this is like personally one of my sort of favourite novels. It doesn't mean I condone any of kind of like the slights, or like I don't. Obviously, some of the descriptions that Fleming uses, I tried to divert. I think it'd be, you know, really terrible, and obviously quite, now with the modern lens, quite racist, and that sort
That's
of thing.
It's mainly the second book. It's mainly this book. It's mainly sexist, isn't it? I'd say.
Yeah, there's a lot of sexism, racism, that sort of thing. Especially when we get to Live and Let Die, you just have to skip passages, and it's
well,
just...
I'll read it with a good heart, but I've often skipped it, but I won't. I promise I won't sit complaining about the racist language.
No, but it's very much on the side.
I will talk about it at the start, and then we'll forget about it. But
I'm just trying to say that Felix, I think, is perhaps a little bit of a stereotype here, a little bit obviously set up as, you know, as an ally of Bond. But for here, definitely, I do think he's a little bit of kind of like a Texan stereotype.
He's a deep South blonde Texan, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, and it's kind of, we've sort of seen this, a familiar trope, certainly like in spy fiction as well. But no, I think, yeah, it's good that you see, you know, you see Felix kind of very early on. And it's, you know, you go back to the 2006 film, obviously Jeffrey Wright, excellent portrayal, definitely is obviously completely different to the novel. But
it doesn't matter, because his Texan background's not that relevant. You just need you need an American agent.
That's it, and it adds a bit of, obviously, it's a kind of time where, especially with, you know, the film's kind of got really popular, where, like, foreign travel wasn't really, especially sort of package holidays, things like that, wasn't kind of, it was really yet sort of to take off, as it were. You know, if you had a lot of money, you could do it, but it wasn't perhaps to the advent of the package, advent of the package holiday, for example, and things like that, to kind of really, an advent in technology as well, to kind of really make travel more accessible for the average working person. So like adding these kind of different, you know, having these exotic locales, international population, like say international cast, kind of adds a bit sort of to adds a bit of kind of like sort of flavor and sound and color and that sort of thing. You know, it's not just exclusively populated by British white males, or you know, so
absolutely. So that's the setup. What we know about Smersh, just think what you know about Spectre from the films. It's more or less the same idea. It is about these sort of spheres of influence. And of course, they really don't want communism spreading through France. You know, we were always, the West was always very comfortable about them annexing parts of Eastern Europe, but not, you know, just as they weren't particularly worried about America and South America, for example. And so it goes on. But the background to Bond is he lives in. What do we learn about him? He's got a housekeeper called May. Is she? She's Scottish.
Yeah, Scottish May.
He's obsessed with eggs. Doesn't like tea. Drinks coffee. Drives a 1930s Bentley.
Bentley supercharged.
Supercharger, which if you look it up is a really old fashioned. You know.
Yeah, well, now it is, but I think probably back then, I don't know if it was
still an old car, but it's his pride and joy. He goes through a few cars through the course of the films, including, I think, in Goldfinger, he does drive an Aston Martin, but he drives like a DB3 because of when the book was written or something like that, but we'll come to that. They go to Rail as us. It's Normandy. It's very near the Somme, where some action in the World War, the First World War took place, certainly. And yeah, Red Mathis is there kind of as an observer, really. And Vesper is there. She is she's not a treasurer. She works for Station S, and that is the bit
Yeah, she has a
of
slightly different role here than she does in the film, didn't she? So.
Station S deals with the Soviet Union. It's basically the bit of it's intelligence on the Soviet Union. And she goes there, and she is British, and she's physically described very like Eva Green, but she is undoubtedly a fairly prim and proper British. And every description of her mentions her chest, which is very Fleming, isn't it? Her protuberances,
With a
front.
fantastic breast. Yes. Oh dear. Something like
My favorite female description was when he says
that.
about Moneypenny, and he says how beautiful she'd be if it wasn't for her eyes being quizzical. And I'm just thinking, has any man in this world ever been getting intimate with a
Been put
woman,
off by a woman's
and
quizzical
then they've just gone,
eyes.
hang on, those eyes are a bit quizzical,
I don't think I've ever
right?
been put off by a man's quizzical eyes. That
I
sounds a
know.
bit rude, but
I don't
it's
even
just like,
really know what it means to you.
what a strange
Does it
quality.
look like she's trying to work out a crossword all the time or
Yeah, how
something?
quizzical do you mean, Ian? Come on, tell us all about it, Fleming
Yeah.
Bond. Come on.
So
Quizzical eyes, what the hell?
that's it. He goes down. He's
Well,
given
now we
now
know
the
why Bond never shags.
That's why.
eyes too quizzical. I don't know why he couldn't have done it
Sorry,
with the
Penny,
eyes.
your eyes are too quizzical. I just can't do it.
Could have burnt Lois Maxwell over the desk or something, surely. But anyway.
Well, they do and die another day, don't they? They finally get around to it.
Another point about money for anyone reading this, those of us old enough to remember the French franc, it was about 9 or 10 to the pound, roughly. But this is the old franc that came in the early 1960s. Francs in this book are about 1,000 to the pound. So when they're talking in millions, it's thousands, really. So he's told he's going to be playing with 25 million francs, which is actually £25,000. And he's given 10, he'll get 10 later on, and he's told to make the other 5 himself because they're told to get their eye in. So yeah, he's sent over there to play for a while first. It's a working casino. It's not just shut down for this, although there is obviously a game with this going on. And he's just playing various games. And they're playing baccarat. Chris, did you understand baccarat?
Kind of. It was kind of like they had to get to nine, and one of the best nine wins.
Yeah,
If
exactly.
it, I mean, and he still might well be playing snap, as far as I know. But yeah, that's kind of how I understand. It was a lot more like slim simplistic. I thought I'm very fast. It's not like
The games are quite quick, aren't they?
Yeah, when you think about it, you think, oh, is it like poker or things like that? Like it is in a film, or you
It
know,
still
you.
goes over an inter it still goes over an extended period. I didn't. They would have a couple of games and then they'd be away from the table for a bit, and that was very like the film. I couldn't tell how many days it went over. When he'd won the game, and he's having a meal with Vesper, that he says something about he remembered the previous night when he was preparing to play, but I don't remember there being a second day. But it's over a period of time in the same way, but it's a smaller group around that kidney table shape.
It does feel very much like Bond plays Lechiffre, Bond loses, Bond re-enters and then wins.
But he
Yeah,
goes all in as soon as he's back in.
it's pretty much all like is in like almost within like pages. It's like it's all done relatively quickly.
I did feel a little bit with that because, all right. So for those that have seen the film, very quickly on baccarat, you get dealt 2 cards face down in this version anyway, because there's various different versions like Chemin de Fer, but that's about who the banker is and who's betting against who. But you get 2 cards and you can have a third face up, and you've got to get as close to nine as possible without busting it. 8 or 9 tends to be the goal. 7 you'll stick on, 6 you'll probably stick on, 5 is kind of the crux where the odds are even as to whether you get better or worse from drawing another card. So obviously if you were given 4 and 5, that's 9, you stick. If you're given 9 and say a king, That's nine as well, because the picture cards don't count at all. And only the number, if you get a two-digit number, i.e. you get a nine and a three, let's say, you've actually got two, because they only count the right-hand number where it's a two-digit number. So if you've got 12, you disregard the one, if that makes sense, okay? So if you had nine and three, you'd ask for a third card because you've got 12, not nine, or you've got two, not 12 or nine. And an ace counts for one. And that's how it works. And all the gambling is based on they can see your third card if you drew one, and they've got to gamble on what did you have to make you draw that third card. So, for example, if your third card is a six, they have to think, well, did he have three or less? Or did he have five and think I'll gamble? And that's kind of how it works. If I have one complaint with it, I think it does play a little bit like a game of pure luck. I think I think Texas Hold'em is my only problem is with the name. I think Texas is the least fucking sophisticated European sounding game in the world. But poker is actually a bit more cinematic, and people have a gist of how poker works, even if they don't fully understand. Baccarat, you'd have to explain. The other flaw is, yes, he gets bankrupted in the exact same way, gets a check from Leiter for the full for about as much as he'd lost, if not more. Whereas in this game, in the film, he's staked with what he has left, and he said, "Look, I'm bleeding chips." So Bond has to work his way back up again. In this one, he's given a check marked with the envelope marked Martial Aid, which, if you know any World War II history, is actually a really smart line. Because if the Americans didn't win the war, they certainly won the peace. He then goes all in. He just gambles it all in, which is kind of abrupt. So I think the book is abrupt. I think it could be actually be a bit longer. But then it leads us into a third act, which is kind of heartbreaking and then really cool at the same time. So that's really the gist of that's the gist of Baccarat and what they're playing. Some bits on Bond. Bond is put there through Jamaica. He resents that a woman's there because they should just be in the kitchen with their pots and pans and they're distracting. I actually think that's a little bit of a cover, don't you, Becca? I think that's Bond trying to convince himself because he's actually attracted to her. He's worried it's going to distract him.
Yeah, sorry, excuse me, I just had a quick drink there. So basically, obviously, Bond's eye is squarely on the mission. Obviously, he's a bit, as you know, Fleming is a little bit himself. Like, Bond is also a womanizer. He's known, and this is kind of where, you know, Fleming does lay down the DNA of that for sure. When he's kind of on a mission, you know, he's kind of got to keep his eye on the prize, as it were. And as you say, like, women are very much kind of like disposable pleasures, really. But he's kind of. It's a bit weird. It's a bit almost a bit of a strange split. Like, on one breath he's kind of saying, yeah, women should, you know, they belong in the kitchen with the pots and pans, things like that. But then also, you know, he's describing how like sumptuously beautiful that Vesper is, and you know, he'll go on about women's heaving breasts and other aspects of you know, that attracts him. It's just like, well, you can't have it both ways, you know. It just seems like a sort of really weird split. But yeah, he seems very much, you know, unless he kind of wants to take them on like as a conquest, for example, unfortunately, they are very much the distraction there. And I like how you're talking about women, so you bring on me. Oh, right, so I'm the token. I'm the token, unfortunately. But yeah, that's just kind of weird. And that's not just on Casino Royale as well. That's pretty much like a trademark throughout. I mean, like, Goldfinger is quite famous for it as well. I mean, obviously, Pussycat Law, for example, is actually a lot more obvious in the book than it is in the film. Obviously, there are lines like, you know, turn off the charm, I'm immune. And obviously, they're fighting the barn where Bond obviously turns her, unfortunately. But like in the book, it's laid on a lot more thickly, which is very shocking for the time.
From
So
Russia
again,
with Love as well.
well, it's like, this is it. Yeah, the
Rosa Klebb
description's on
flat
here.
out tries to like sleep with Tatiana.
That's it. Yeah, and the description of the, you know, the gypsy fights and things like that, for example. Sorry, Romani. So I do apologise. I don't mean to use that offensive word. The traveller camp, as well. Just some of the descriptions, and they're very vivid. But it's just almost kind of a strange kind of dichotomy, almost. of like, you know, something that's very beautiful, but then also very much confined to that sort of traditional domestic role, and you know, woe betide you know, if you try to break out of that. So.
Yeah, I guess a couple of other differences to discuss would be that the threats on Bond's life, he's nearly killed before the game starts. I think he blows his cover much as in the film. He's arrogant enough to sort of do that. But isn't he killed the night before with an explosion? He's
Yeah, try
got.
to blow him up the night before, don't
Yeah,
they?
so this kind of happens just as he meets Vesper for the first time. Literally, just like,
Yeah, she's brought for a drink with them all or
yeah,
something. They'll go for a drink.
with
Mathis or Matisse.
Matisse. I think it's Ma
Mathis.
Yeah.
If you say Mathis, so what?
Matisse is the painter. I just call him Mathis.
Mind you, it's only because I went with the audiobook anyway. If I'd physically read it and never done an audiobook, I would have read it as Mathis anyway.
But no,
no, it's Matisse, definitely.
I do th actually I do think Matisse is actually one of the more faithful adaptations in the film. I think he kind of he's kind of exactly who I pick. I mean, I know I've got like the disadvantage of seeing the film first, but he kind of translates well into the book, I think, if
He's a
that makes sense.
troubleshooter, and he also says something very similar about melted your cold dead heart.
Yeah,
He says
yeah,
something really
there's a
similar.
line from the
He
novel that was a
has
bit
that kind
interesting.
of like very sort of warm charm
Yeah.
of this kind of like, and also of being like a bit more of like clued on and like knowing what's going on, but also being like dead like, oh, this is that introducing Vesper, or this is the Mrs. Lynn, you know, like kind of thinking.
Congratulations on your protuberances. We were one.
Yeah.
He was talking about her nipples and everything, describing her. Yeah.
I will say this though. There is something about the way that Fleming writes, and I don't know whether it's because I'm not, for anyone listening, I am not like a huge reader, so yeah, maybe it's just down to my sheer inexperience of like what really actual novels it actually is actually like. But I listened to the audiobook of like Garth Marenghi. I don't know if anyone knows what Garth Marenghi, but Garth Marenghi's like a parody of like a Stephen King,
Go
but
and do yourself a favor, listeners. Go and find, by whatever means necessary, the 2004 sitcom Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
it's brilliant. It really is brilliant.
Go
And
on,
yeah, he's
Chris.
got a new
Tell
book out.
listeners a bit about him, though. Yeah, go on.
Oh well, basically he's like a parody of Stephen King in this kind of like really sort of high inflated opinion of himself, but really he just turns out shit. He just
Overlong shit, normally set in Romford or something,
yeah.
a nondescript town in Essex.
But you know, and I listened to he's come out with he's come out with two books actually, but I listened to the first one, Terradrome, or I think it's something like
Terradome, I
that,
think.
Terradome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
And
haven't listened to it, but I might do now. Is it good?
it is. I don't know. I kind of like think I kind of got like, get tripped up with like the way of his writing style and the way he was like, you know, when like most of the comedy is down to him explaining unnecessary details or getting lost, things like that, and that's the kind of the thing where I kind of,
Teratome, sorry. Incarcerat teratome.
and that was
Just
kind of this is kind of the thing with like Fleming. Sometimes I thought like, do you really need to be like describing these as much as you are, like you know, or you kind of getting lost in sort of like details that aren't that important, like you know, like oh, and then Bond sort of thinks, oh yes, I think I'll tip the waiter, and then yes, I'll give the full list of the you know of the menu order, and like oh yeah, she's got cracking breath, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I think
Wasn't
I.
he called Nick in Dark Place as well? Or is his lead men always called? Hang on a minute.
I don't know. In Territory, he's basically sort of like writing about like a version of himself.
Yeah.
It's but and it's kind of like
no, he's Rick. Rick Douglas. And, yeah,
it's kind of like a trilogy of stories, like of shorter stories, but kind of connect with one another.
I think he's very good. I think he's decent at describing action, and he's very good at describing food and clothing, but it's not belaboured too much. His gaze goes on what Bond's gaze would go on, so that's why he's unashamedly describing Vesper the way he does.
Yeah, but there's just certain little things where I just like thought, I don't know, maybe just kind of a bit prolong that. But then again, I listen to the audiobook quite a lot, so again, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, we get it. She's got nice tits.
Yeah, I think it mostly shows in like spoiler is the way that the sheaf is killed. It goes on about that third eye for like a paragraph.
It does,
and I just thought like, surely the more nuanced take would say, and then the sheaf had a third eye. We all know what that means, and just leave it as that. And maybe say that he slumps and falls to the ground.
He really rinses that like, really gory detail, doesn't he? Just like, maybe his publisher were like, Ian, we need more gory detail.
It's not even gory. It's just like, it's an eye that without eyelashes, and doesn't, that just sort of sits in between like the.
We get it. I think it's quite gory, but anyway, that's just me. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's a bit overcooked, isn't it, in some places. But he does kind of luxuriate over like the minutiae, the minor details, like as you say, Chris, like the menu order, like the food he eats, the wine he drinks, the car he drives, the clothes he's wearing, everything. You know, you learn about like in Doctor No, you know, it goes into great detail about the textures of the material that Bond's wearing, sort of like cotton, linen, things like that.
Yeah,
I don't think
I'm pretty particularly good with my examples, quite frankly, because I do appreciate the details, and I think the thing with about the you know, as soon as I said it, the tipping of the waiter, I knew exactly why, because that was just after like Ian got killed by an explosion, so he has this like newfound, oh, you know, I'm gonna enjoy life. Do you know what I mean? So I understand why that.
Yeah.
Stuff those certain things are in there. I'm just not really sort of pick. It's. I think anyone who maybe listens to the audio or reads the book might know it's more of the smaller things, or maybe just overdoes things just a bit too much.
Yeah.
That makes me think. All right, okay, come on. Move it along.
But then I remember reading a Dean Koontz book years ago, and he was like describing a sunrise, and I was thinking, "Fucking stop!" Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
They're quite like tomes, aren't they? They're quite chunkers.
Anyway, if he didn't spend ages talking about the sunrise, it probably...
describing the beautiful sunrise but in a really lyrical way.
So he's nearly killed by, but it really lays home how vicious Le Chiffre is, because he's nearly killed right at the start by a couple of Bulgarian henchmen who were themselves killed by these suitcase bombs, when they think one of them is just, they're different colours, and they think one is just a smokescreen, and they're not. And Bond is literally just saved by being behind something.
Yeah.
It's very close. He comes very close to, obviously, being a 00. It's a very risky business. But he just come really close to death quite a few times.
And instead of the drugging, he is, although the Vesper's in it, the drink, like literally the same.
Yeah.
But
that's where it comes from.
That's where it comes from. They copied that bit. Instead of the drugging, he gets like a gun concealed in a cane, held at like the base of his back.
Mm. He has to pretend to faint.
Yeah, so he has.
If you've seen the.
If he doesn't lose immediately, he's going to be paralysed, and the guy would have left before anyone's realised what happened.
Yeah, if you've seen the 1950s TV adaptation, that's quite faithful to this original novel here. Obviously, where the 2006 Daniel Craig film does depart very occasionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Those are the major differences and similarities, really. He's in more danger.
Vesper is probably, in terms of characters, probably way different than she is.
She sounds upper middle class British.
Not in the description, but mostly in character. And I think probably, especially for modern sensibilities, I think generally speaking, the film does a better job of making a character. Do you know if that makes sense?
I think she's probably better, certainly in the Daniel Craig version. She's built up a little bit more, and you find out more about her, you find out more of a backstory.
Eva Green is certainly built.
the fact that she's in control.
She's very glamorous. She's very beautiful.
Yeah, she has control of the money, also adds that element of clash where, no, I'm not going to give you the money. Do you know what I mean? Whether that's not really like a thing in the novel.
It's not at all. She's
Yeah,
just
she's
there
not
as an
in the novel,
assistant.
she's not
And
related
it,
at all to the Treasury.
and again, I don't think this helps the fact that I listen to audiobook, but I do find when an audiobook is read by a man and they're reading out a female character's line, it just comes across as a bit.
Yeah, they talk like this.
Yeah.
My favorite
Vespa's
voice.
like, I love you.
I'm pretty sure one of them is read by John and Emily. It might not be, but I'm pretty sure one of them. Oh no, Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
Rosamund
So
Pike reads the spy
you should talk
letter.
like this when she has to do a man's voice.
Yeah,
And Bond
probably.
came in and was like this.
But it's like, okay, this kind of thing. I mean, like even like
I
Stephen
love you,
Fry,
James.
who's quite does a lot of audiobooks and is quite
Yeah.
a cupboard. He read like 1984 and like is it Julia the main one? It, again,
Yeah, I
he does the
think
same
so.
thing. Yes, love. Oh, okay, darling. Yes.
No, he's known
It's
for
just like.
reading the Harry Potter audiobooks as well, isn't he? So he does that obviously with female characters. So there's not
Yeah.
really much else you can do, is there? You can't
No.
unless you're
Unless
a
you do it
master of
as a
doing all these
team.
different voices. I mean, I don't know
Yeah.
how else
So
would you do it?
she's a bit of a she comes off as a bit of a wet blanket in places, to be honest with you. But that's Fleming writing women at this point. But he does prove through the series he can write women. That's a funny thing. But
Yeah, I
Bond
mean,
falls in love with her
to
against his better judgment, really.
in his defense, I mean, she does turn out there is a reason, could be a good reason, because she is like a double
A
agent.
double agent, yeah.
She is,
So
yeah,
she's a bit
unfortunately.
like, she's a bit
And
like, well.
again, they really have thought about how to present that information. So we are going a bit all over the place here, but it's pointless going through the plot strictly sequentially. But of course, in the film, he's on the phone to Judi Dench, and Judi Dench, he's just resigned, and Judi Dench says, "We'll talk about that later," and explains Vesper's backstory. She was in love with this guy. He was captured, and she was forced into what she did. She did love you, James. That's why she led you to Mr. White. In the book, it is a suicide letter. You can't really do that in the book. You can't just have her found dead in her suite and then Bond silently reads a letter in her voice. That's too much like a TV film. So that's the difference. So again, having won the game, they go for a meal. That's very similar. And then they go and stay in like, and then they stay in like a, oh, he's beaten, isn't he? He's beaten in the same way. She's kidnapped. And he drives after her. It's much, much longer in the book. He's pursuing them for ages and at a greater distance. And she is in the back of the car with her skirt tied up over her head. Let's only hope she was wearing pants.
Yeah, I just
Because
we reviewed this a while ago on some part of a small book group on Instagram, and
it
yeah,
would get
we said
ridiculous.
exactly the same thing. We were like, I hope she's wearing underwear.
Yeah. Because it would look ridiculous, but anyway, they
There'll
lay
probably be
some.
some detailed description of the undercarriage.
Yeah, they lay a trap across the road, don't they? That's what they do in there. They blow his tires out. That's
Yeah.
they destroy his car, and then they drag him away to be punished, to be beaten with a carpet beater, similar to the film, but probably more brutal, and ends with him having a Cyrillic W shape carved into his
Yeah, so now he
hand.
gets a scar on the back of his hand.
It's to identify him as a Smersh, so as a spy, to Smersh agents. There is some. We'll see in the next book. There's been plastic surgery on that, which the only way it's noticeable is sort of his hair grows slightly the wrong way.
Yeah, he has a
That
skin graft, doesn't he?
skin graft.
So it'll be
And
kind of
yeah.
cool if the next Bond actually has like some sort of weird sort of skin graft mark on it on his hand. A lot of attention to detail.
With villains and things like obviously with Fleming, they are obviously invariably foreign or scarred or have some kind of imperfection. And it's interesting that obviously with Bond it's the same. He's got that scar-ish kind of like down his cheek, and like in the film, like in Rush of Love, for example, we see he's got the scar on the on his back. And then obviously in the literary Bond, he has kind of got that scarring, that graft on his hand as well. So it's quite interesting there.
Well, I kind of thought this because, because one of the points is like this again, Dark Lord, but this is towards the end of the book. The guy that's following both Bond and Vesper is like wearing a like an eye patch or type thing.
As in the film.
Yeah, exactly like the film. Exact same name as well, which is a nice little attention to detail.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he pops up
But
again.
the. But how just casually Bond just sort of goes, hey, he looks like any other normal guy. I don't know what you I mean. Like,
It could be anybody.
but to us, it's like he just looks like this is so blatantly like so like looks like all Philip. But then again, you're thinking like, well, this is not long after the war. Surely most men of a certain age would probably have seen war and would probably, it wouldn't be that unusual to have like some sort of injuries.
They're probably going to have something, aren't they? Or PTSD or something like that.
It wouldn't be a shock. You did have that in First World War where people had these sort of coverings on their face instead of like plastic surgery because it didn't really exist. Yeah.
But yeah, it's something that kind of came out as well. It's the same with any sort of like, well, not same with any sort of warfare, but it's usually kind of something like that would have come out of like warfare and that sort of thing. Like if you go to like Imperial War Museum, for example, there's a small section of kind of all the kind of like prosthetics and the development of that sort of they came out of, like, especially First World War and Second World War as well. I mean, they kind of look not very sophisticated to our eye, to more modern sensibilities. But you know, back then that was probably like cutting edge. And yeah, as you say, coming out of the Second World War, for example, as well. I think you're perfectly right. You know, that sort of thing probably would have been a lot more common.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that sometimes like that kind of gets lost in translation sometimes with time. You know, so it's like, oh, of course, yeah, because you know there probably would be more like injuries and things like that. But it would be sort of this would probably be like a bit more like the norm. But it is a bit more of a striking image to sort of think like, you know, how. Towards the end of the film, how Bond's just completely just like, it's nothing, it's fine. You know, how like, especially how Vesper's acting incredibly suspicious, and Bond does kind of like say.
I find the third act, if you think of it in film terms, if we talk about it probably isn't a three act structure, but if you think of it as a three act, the third act really starts with Bond's in hospital after this beating, and he really does have this sort of internal monologue about the whole morality of the Cold War, and you know, is anyone particularly, you know, and he's already talking of his intention to resign, so it isn't just about a woman, although it is partly that. And Vesper visits him in hospital. He seems to be in hospital a long time, and he's now like, and she, when he gets out, she sort of found this guest house for him, this little quiet place. And she just shows him all the love he wants. He's not sure about the job, and he just does think there's more to life. But she starts getting very twitchy. You know, a car will go past this house, and she's absolutely sure she's being followed. And it is actually this guy Gettler. And she's just up and down in mood, and it's just Bond is just distraught because he's losing her to something, and he's not sure what. And one minute she's all over him, the next minute she's really silent and not talking, and he's going off and like having a swim in the sea by himself, which is a little bit like I suppose the start of No Time to Die, where they're both fond of doing that. And you know, one morning, you know, and then they have one night of lovemaking, which, when you know what's going to be happening right next in the book, you can sort of see you can see her last night of him before she kills herself. And she basically leaves a note. She's working for the Soviets, and they've kidnapped her lover, which in this case was a Polish guy. And he'd given information about her, and then they've blackmailed her to do this mission. And the mission, it was kidnapping. The kidnapping was fake. And she's now realized she's never going to be free of this guy. And so she's killed herself.
Spoiler alert.
And when he calls in to the London liaison, which is just someone not that familiar with the mission, who just passes on messages, and he just says, yeah, 3030 was a double, which was her name, and he said, yeah, the bitch is dead now.
Double working for Redland.
Yeah.
But I like how they use that line in the film as well. I think it's a nice touch. But I remember going to see it at the cinema. It was packed. I think it was obviously when the first day came out or something. And obviously, you know, we all sort of laughed and knowingly at the various kind of references all the way through and everything. And I remember like, oh yeah, she was a double agent. The bitch is dead, blah, blah. And then like, Craig said that line, and then somebody let out this huge laugh, and it was just the most inappropriate thing. I was like, oh my god, idiot.
And the thing is, the reason I've talked about it as a sort of self-contained act is because of that. Because the act starts with Bond saying, what is the morality of this anyway? There's got to be more to life. And I think he knows under it all, he's already starting to fall for Vesper. He's certainly fixating on her a lot. And the act ends with him trying to convince himself is sort of cold heart as, you know, iced up again, that he's just like, it doesn't matter, she's dead. But you know, the very fact that he wants to go after the people that did this, the hand that holds the whip, as it's described, and Barbara and Michael talk about it when they made the film as well, the hand that holds the whip, says that he did give everything of himself over to her, and he's been betrayed, so he is now straight back on mission basically, and he has to convince himself he didn't care. And repeatedly through the series, we'll see Bond did care. Bond did care about Carla Brand. He did care to some degree about Honey Rider. He did fall for Tracy. So
I think
Bond.
this was kind of like the blueprint almost.
Well, the Tracy takes the role in the film
Oh, yeah, obviously, Tracy. Yeah, cool.
spiritually, because Casino Royale didn't exist, which means that it's not a mark against Connery, but it's just that the film that explains why Bond is the way he is
Yeah.
happens after all the sort of classic Connery entries.
Definitely. But I just want meant in terms of the novels, that's all.
Yeah, in
Obviously,
terms of the
Tracy
novel,
is the main one for sure, but.
and the book, but the book captured it. The film captured what the book was trying to do, you know, but the book made it all about love because it's a film, whereas the novel was able to have that internal dialogue that this is all shades of grey anyway, because the Cold War was very like that. And if you think about I alluded to it earlier, the Cold War more generally was about spheres of influence. There were very few parts of the world we were willing to take on communist regimes in, because we were like, well, you can have this bit and we'll have that bit. You know, the morality of it was rather grey to begin with. And Bond recognizes this, but having been hurt, he just effectively denies that to himself. But the last sort of 20, 30 pages of I'm gonna go after the people that did this is quite hard hitting.
Yeah, because well, it's as you say, it's got these. There's nothing left now other than just like, right, well, onto the next job. It's like, it's this is what I'm gonna do now, which is in a way, it's been quite it's. I want to say it's not cliche, because I think this kind of sets the benchmark for it. I think this has been
Bad luck,
done.
Bond. You loved her.
No, but this is probably like sort of set the standard for this kind of thing, though. Because one of the things why Bond is shall we say, blindsided in the last part of the book, is because he's kind of like, yeah, I don't really. Don't want to sort of read into it, and now he's kind of like put himself away. He's found this new found love for life, and now he's skeptical of the whole spy thing. He's a bit like, ah, oh, it's all a bit, what is good and bad really? I mean, just kind of you give yourself and blah, blah, all this kind of
But
thing.
even that is Bond talking to himself. We don't really know. It's open to interpretation how much he believes that bit, just as the bit of, I don't want Vesper here because she's a woman, just as that could be him trying to convince himself, that bit could be as
I
well. And the
mean,
bitch is dead at the end definitely is.
yeah, because definitely with the old pots and pans line, that is literally him. That line of dialogue is said
He's,
when
because
he's
he's annoyed, because he could be distracted now.
well, yeah, because he's actively. This is just after Vesper's been kidnapped, so he's actively chasing her. And he's like, why can't they just fucking
Yeah.
stay out of it?
Yeah.
Then I wouldn't have to be like jeopardize the mission, because he's saying things like, well, if she gets killed, well, that's her luck, kind of thing. Well, at the same time, he's actively trying to save her, so it's a bit of a contradiction in terms. He's like saying, like, if he really didn't care, he wouldn't have bothered. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Of course, the other thing that occurs to me is he took the name from, everyone knows this story, he took the name James Bond from a book he had on Birds of the West Indies, which he used to use to bird watch in Jamaica when he was there,
Yeah, is it a
which is a
known ornithologist?
but I love when they interviewed him about it. He said, oh, I thought that was a very quiet name, like Peregrine Carruthers, and I was thinking, imagine if he'd gone with Peregrine Carruthers. And Daniel
Well,
Craig
we had like
is
in the sort of
Peregrine
30s and 40s, you had
Carruthers.
like Sexton Blake, so you could have had it was Carruthers, Peregrine
Carruthers.
Carruthers. Or even if they'd gone
Peregrine
with some of
Gr
the cover names
That's a
out
very
there.
English name, isn't it?
I know.
I'm pretty sure in one of the
Daniel Craig
continuation
is
novels, I don't
James
know.
St. John Smythe.
St. John's Bride, yeah. I want to say that it might not be. Maybe in one of the Charlie Hickson continuation novels. I'm pretty sure one of the continuation authors does pick up on that name, and there is a character called Peregrine somewhere along the
I
line.
do
I'm not
have
quite sure.
Silverfin on audiobook. I need to listen to it sometime. I might
It
next.
might be on there,
I'm
but I
currently
don't know
listening
correctly,
to
unfortunately.
just off the point. I'm currently listening to all right, it's about 18 hours long and I've got about 5 hours left, so I'm like two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through. I'm listening to Patrick Stewart's autobiography. He voices it himself. And it's really good because he's really only just started on Star Trek. So normally when you read an autobiography, there's a part of you thinking, hurry up and get famous. I remember Frank Skinner saying that when he wrote his own book, how much do you really want to read about someone's childhood? And I must say, I was utterly captivated by his childhood, by the sort of Royal Shakespeare Company years, all of that. So it's really good, by the way. But yeah, I might try give Silverfin a
Yeah, he's
go
had quite an interesting
afterwards.
life, hasn't he?
Is it good, Silverfin?
Yes, I highly recommend it. Definitely check out you guys as well, but also listeners as well. If this is your first diving into Bond, or if you've read all the novels and the continuation novels, do get in touch with us. Let us know what is your favourite. But yeah, if you're diving into Bond and starting your Fleming, if you want to read more, I highly recommend, obviously, read all the Flemings. But I can highly recommend the continuation authors as well. John Gardner,
Do that. I'm
perhaps.
going to do that, and well, I'm going to hang off on Live and Let Die because even if we did that next, we've got a whole series in the way. But I might give Silverfin a go just to see.
Yeah, definitely check out. Yeah, Charlie Hickson does kind of go. Obviously, you've got Charlie Hickson and Steve Cole are going to young Bond books, which are fantastic because they kind of go in, obviously go into his younger days, sort of as a teenager, that sort of thing. First time going away from
From home.
Aunt Charmian, and sort of you
Yeah.
learn more about his backstory and that sort of thing.
Because he may have been retrofitted as Scottish, but he was largely brought up in Kent after his parents died. So
Or is it, yeah,
it makes sense that
of
he's
Scottish
Anglo. He
ancestry for
wouldn't
sure.
necessarily, yeah, he wouldn't necessarily have a Scottish accent, and that's why half of his childhood was spent in Kent. It could be, you could play it either way. Daniel Craig is as valid as like Sean Connery, if you like, because you could lean into the Scottishness or away from it because he was out of Scotland before his teens.
No, that's it. It just depends, doesn't it? So, but yeah, in a word, yes. But yeah, definitely do and check out all the continuation novels and also the young Bond novels.
Going to
Really,
download
really
it now.
fantastic. So,
I'm going to download it now. I'm going to listen to
do it,
that.
do it.
All right. I've got it. I've just
And they're
I've I
obviously
only
they're more
download what I
towards
want to listen to.
a YA audience, probably about 8, 10, 11, 12. So they whip along at a really fantastic pace. But yeah, if you like Charlie Hickson, I can recommend Steve Cole's books as well.
Yeah, I think they sort of he took over after Charlie Hickson went, didn't he? But yes, yeah, Bond at school, it's Bond at
I can
evening,
just
of
recommend
course.
all the Bond books generally.
But I mean, if you stick to the most of the ones that are in the sort of Fleming timeline are good in my opinion, most of them. But I would say the closest the ones that we mentioned earlier, and I've blanked again, Horowitz is probably the closest to Fleming for me. A lot of people really like the Colonel Sun one. I just think like the start of it. I like, spoiler alert, M is kidnapped in that, and that sequence of it is really, really good. The rest of it, I could take or leave.
Yeah, Colonel Sun's a bit different as well because it's a bit of an outlier. Again, that's a bit of a chunky tome.
It's at the end of his career, but a lot of the other ones around there, I'm not that keen on. Raymond Benson's are very good as a sort of Brosnan era.
I think he's fab. Literally, he's probably my. I was, oh my gosh, I was.
But he's not like
I was so
Fleming.
lucky to meet
He's
him.
like Brosnan, the books of missions you didn't see.
No, he's very much kind of brings Bond. So obviously you had John Gardner bringing Bond into kicking and screaming into the 80s. They are
Making him
very eighties.
he drove a Saab and smoked
He drove a
Silk Cut.
Saab, and yeah,
Smoked Silk Cut. James Bond
Q has an
smokes
assistant called
Silk Cut.
Q apostrophe
I don't
UTE,
smoke
which is like
anymore, but I'm offended by that. Smoking
sorry.
Silk Cut.
Silk Cut is the 1980s, wearing very
What
wide
sort of thing?
lapels.
What sort of thing would James Bond smoke? What?
I think he would still smoke. He
It's
would.
Ms. Morley's with his
He
sweet
would
rings, you know.
either. He would either smoke
Would he
Bespoke,
vape these days?
or he'd
He
smoke.
wouldn't vape, no.
I tell you, he'd smoke Gauloises. Yeah.
Gaulois. Really?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know.
If
Smokers
he was
of Bond, if you get in
if he was
touch.
smoking off the shelf cigarettes, that's what it would be.
I don't think he would, though. He'd go back to his Turkish blend with the three
But
rings and.
yeah, that's the actual real answer. You'd have to
Yeah,
make
Borland,
for it.
whatever they're called. Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't smoke, so I don't know.
Moreland with the gold band on them.
Yeah, I don't smoke at all. But you know, he wouldn't vape. I can't
So
see it.
not
I
Richmond Super
really can't
Kings
see
then.
it.
Yeah, red band.
So,
Camel.
Rothmans. Or a cigar. He might take a leaf out of Roger's book and smoke up a big cigar. But yeah, no, it's well, yeah, as I say, as John Gardner was very 1980s. Obviously, Fleming was very
I've still got some of those
50s
to
and
listen
60s.
to be fair. What's the first one? License revoked, isn't it?
Yes.
No, is
Yeah,
it
really good.
License renewed? Sorry, I'm thinking of the original name of the film. License renewed is the first John Gardner one. And the whole thinking behind the book was, imagine Bond had been frozen and then like everyone unthawed in the 80s.
It's a bit weird. It is a little bit
I
strange.
might give that a go as well, but I
But then, yeah,
would
the reference
recommend
is
that.
very much obviously Bond for the 90s, and it's a lot more cinematic. It's a lot more kind of like broad in its scope as well.
It is the Brosnan films as books. It's Brosnan in missions you never got films of, basically.
But he also did a lot of novelizations as well. Sorry, obviously like Tomorrow Never Dies, Die Another Day, that sort of thing. Goldeneye.
I don't like
Can't
novelizations in
remember.
general.
I think that's quite interesting.
No.
So I was really lucky to meet
He
a
doesn't count it the
client today.
same either. We all know Raymond a little bit just from like social media, and
Yeah,
he
definitely.
doesn't count them as the same either. As his
Although
own book.
they're all different, aren't they? They're all different, and there's more some kind of follow on, but some don't as well. But I think some of the novelizations have been okay. To be honest, I've not read them for a long time. Most recent one I read
I've read everything. I've
was
read
probably Tornado.
everything.
I've literally read all the books, but I'm
I've
just saying
read
I've
everything
unfortunately read
set in
them
the
recently.
50s. Everything set in the 50s and 60s, with the exception of the most recent Horowitz, which I still haven't got round to because it's at
No,
the end. So
Dave, you really must. I'm sorry, but you really must get around to
I
reading them.
might,
They are
I'm
fantastic. I
tempted
highly
to
recommend
listen,
it.
tempted to listen to it after we finish with Fleming,
Yeah, do it. I highly
because
recommend it.
what's it called again?
It'll change your opinion.
What's
It
it
will
called
change your
again?
opinion for sure.
What's its name? I've forgotten.
Which one?
I've got it. The most recent Horowitz,
Oh, isn't it?
with the Mind to Kill.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's set at the end of his career. Because he'd done one at the beginning, one in the middle, and one at the beginning.
Yes.
But my
Yeah,
favorite
it's
of the
recently come out in
two,
paperback.
Trigger Mortis is good, and it's got good racing sequence in it. But Forever in a Day's great. If it's a, I'd
I
start
think
there
it's kind of like
honestly. If you've never read
you can read
Bond.
it before Casino Royale, can't you? It's kind of like the prequel almost.
Because we're used to origin stories now in our films and stuff, it's nice as an origin story before you get to Casino Royale.
I wonder if they do eventually reboot Bond. That's probably where they'll go, I can imagine. If
I
they're going
don't
to do a
know.
literary adaptation, I don't know, but or
Yeah.
if they're going to wipe slate
What's the
completely, I don't
female
know.
in it called? Agent 16.
Oh, but
Agent
yeah, I can't
16.
remember her name off the top of my head.
It's
But
really good. It's really, really
yeah,
good.
really got to check it out. But yeah,
And it's
so yeah,
read
John
by
Gunn's
Matthew
definitely
Good
gone
as
for the
well, isn't it?
1980s, and
Yeah.
Benson bringing it screaming into the 1990s for sure.
So, Chris, would having now finally done a Fleming, would you recommend it?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's a
Yeah.
bit of an odd experience for me because it's like again, it's like reading a book which you already kind of know. Before reading it, I could probably explain in broad terms what happens in it.
You could at least give the bits that you don't think would be not just in the film, if you know what I mean. You'd go, well,
Yeah.
there'd definitely be the card game. I bet he loses the money. I bet he's tortured. I
Yeah,
bet
you can kind of
Vesper
see
could.
those beats, can't you?
Vesper will betray him. He'll probably say the bitch is dead. So you might get the. If you had to guess, you'd probably get the card game wrong. And you might. If you had to guess, you would say
Can
Le
see there's
Chiffre.
a Casino Royale bingo sheet that you're kind of laying down for Chris.
I mean,
Yeah.
you wouldn't necessarily know how he lost the money, but you probably wouldn't guess. You'd go, well, it's Le Chiffre trying to make money back.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was like sort of. So I had one mind of like of the, this read this reading it, and the other mind was sort of like, oh, how is this different from everything else that I know? And a lot of it was particularly in terms of like how Bond is as well.
He's not entirely likable. I think Craig captured that aspect, even though he was much
That's the
more
whole point.
action.
He's not meant to be, even though he's the true hero. Sorry to jump in, but I think that's the whole point. Fleming's written him that way, that
Yeah.
he's a sexist, misogynist dinosaur.
That's why I think Connery was so close, because Connery got it. Connery had a
He really
bit of
did.
brutality to him. I don't think, as much as Dalton fits the look and the world weariness, he's too nice.
Yeah, he hasn't got that kind of. I mean, he obviously did a lot of stunts and everything, but he hasn't got that cool streak, I would
He's
say,
brilliant, by the way. I
Connery
love
had.
Dalton, but
Yeah, Dalton's fantastic,
I
definitely.
would say controversially,
It was definitely missing from Roger Moore and Pierce Brosnan.
I think Sean Connery is closer to Ian Fleming's James Bond than Dalton is.
That's not controversial at all. I think that's accepted.
Yeah, but everyone goes,
I think
no, the literary one
I
is
think that's why
Brosnan,
Connery
he's Dalton.
remains so popular. I mean,
Dalton's
obviously,
close, but he's
they all
nice.
have.
He's
Yeah, I
caring.
think that's. I wouldn't say that's controversial personally. But
Could
I
you
think
imagine?
that's kind of why he. You know that. Sorry, but yeah, I think that's kind of why he is so popular, and he consistently tops kind of lists of, who's your favorite Bond, who's the best Bond, that sort of thing, because of that closeness, because he did kind of get that aspect to him. And I think that's probably why, people like sort of Bros,
You know the bit
Roger
in
Moore,
From
and
Russia
maybe
with
to a
Love
lesser
where he
extent George
says,
as well, for example, kind of didn't capture that or didn't feel it was appropriate at the time to have that aspect to it. Obviously, there are times like with Roger Moore, we kind of saw it, obviously twisting Andre Anders' arm and things like
yeah,
that,
but that weren't him, was it?
slapping
That
people
was him.
very
That was him
deep.
trying to figure him out. The point I was going to make was where she says in From Russia with Love to him, "Will you make love to me?" And he goes, "Yeah, day and night." And I'm just thinking that is so Ian Fleming's James Bond. That's just fucking women.
Then, like, what about the villain?
Yeah.
No, but the thing that got me about it, though, is like, I mean, I got the coldness. I mean, I think I knew that was going, it's like, all like very sort of cold and sort of on the job. But it's also like the parts of these look just a bit like world weary. It seems to be a bit more like, as we alluded to before with the conversation about like, good and evil, he's very much like, yeah, it's a bit all grey, isn't it? It's all very like sort of, I don't know, this kind of thing. These kind of things that I sort of wasn't quite expecting, and particularly with the gushy romance stuff, how Bond is kind of like just almost like swept away. I wasn't sort of expecting Bond to be kind of like full on like in denial about certain things.
But he does the married women thing exactly the same as in the film, and it's why? Because there's no emotional entanglement.
Yes, like friends with
Fair.
benefits.
The other thing I thought was nice is actually having like an official character to Phoenix Lighter. Oh, okay, well, here's an
Yeah, it's
actual
more
take.
rounded sort of like 3D character, isn't he? So
Yeah, it's just
I would agree.
it's not just like, oh, it's just another actor popping up who, it's just all right. Generic American
Generic
ally.
Bond ally. Yeah.
Here's a bit more of like, oh well, here's an actual, like here's the actual sort of a character of what he's supposed to be like. Cause, oh, that was nice to see, or read, I should say. But yeah, no, but to answer your question, yes, I would recommend it.
And so, yeah, we will be doing more of these in the future. The next one is not going to be for a while, but it's Live and Let Die, which the language is one thing, what terms you use, but it's actually more Fleming's observations on the black man, which are a little bit awkward. But I think what I'll do is when I read it, I will try to pretty much ignore that. I might mention it up front and then we'll forget about it and talk about the story and the characters. So in some respects, I'm looking forward to revisiting it because as I go through them, I tend to skip that one. And it's not because I'm some fucking snowflake. It's nothing to do with that. It's just, I find it a bit distasteful. It's just like, there's no point in reading it. But as we're sort of introducing Chris for the first time, I will. And I'll read it with a very open mind. My memory of the first few books is that I kind of alternated. I liked one and then didn't like the next one so much. And the third one's Moonraker, which is brilliant. Nothing like the film. They've just taken the title and the name of the bad guy. That's about it. So yeah, we'll come back to these.
Yeah,
And
they do kind of
anything?
diverge a little bit, don't they, as
Yeah.
well? So, but yeah, so it's one of those, again, it's very much kind of its time. We do have to kind of go in and keep an open mind, shall we say.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
it
And I
may
will.
be interesting listening to the audio book to see if there's anything that's edited out, anything that's cut out.
Nope, not to my knowledge. It's read by
No.
Rory Kinnear, that
Okay,
one.
let us know, Chris. Let us know.
Yeah, it's read by
Yeah.
Rory Kinnear, and he has to say all the slightly dated language.
I will say, yeah, Casino Royale is actually read by Dan Stevens, the one I listened to, and
Yeah, he would have been a great Bond.
yeah.
He does a good job. He in terms of the sound, it like the how he reads the character, it is exactly how you'd picture it. So
They do.
makes you
They
wonder
do
whether.
vary. I mean, they Honor Majesty's Secret Service is read by David Tennant in his not in his native language in his native
In a
accent.
Scottish accent. Is
Martin
Doctor Who even
Jarvis
gone?
does
Hey.
one. Rory Cunningham does one. There's a few. Years ago, I went on a holiday and I took the audio a previous version of the Casino Royale audiobook with me, and it was read by Rufus Sewell.
Oh, for sure. Yep. Although, yeah, there's a set that you can buy. Casino Royale, Live and Let Die, Moonraker, and Diamonds Are Forever. And it's kind of like a four disc set that you can buy. I think one is read by Hugh Carshy as well. One is read
Yes.
by Rosamund Pike.
Toby Stevens does one, I
Toby
think.
Stevens does one. That's
Jason
it.
Isaacs does
Yep, that is Jason
Thunderball.
Isaacs. Really
Yeah,
good.
Thunderball is part of the trilogy that does have Spectre in it. Let me
Yep,
just type up.
it's a Spectre
Let me
trilogy.
look in for. Hang on a minute. Let me, because there is a series of them, and they call, for example, Forever in a Day is listed as book zero because it comes
Yeah,
before.
because it introduces, so it is a Spectre trilogy.
Yeah, I'm just looking for the series it's part of. Hang on. It was easier on the app, not on the website. It's not actually there, but yeah, you could. Oh yeah, James Bond the Collection.
Yeah,
So
that's the one.
Forever in a Day, Book Zero, Casino Royale. I'll run you through them. It's Dan Stevens, Live and Let Die is Rory Kinnear. Moonraker is Bill Nighy. You can buy it in Hindi as well.
With Bill and I
David
doing
Lu
the.
Damien Lewis does Diamonds Are
Oh,
Forever.
yes, I forgot about him.
Toby Stevens from Russia with Love. Hugh Quashie, Doctor No. Hugh Bonneville, Goldfinger. For Your Eyes Only is Samuel West. Anyone listening who doesn't know who Samuel West is, he's a character actor you'll have seen in a lot of stuff, but his mum is Prunella
Fiona
Scales, who's
Scales.
best known
His dad's
for
Timothy West.
Fawlty Towers, and his dad's Timothy West, yeah. Thunderball, Jason Isaacs, The Spy Who Loved Me, Rosamund Pike. I really like that book, but it is a curiosity. David Tennant, Majesties. Martin Jarvis, You Only Live Twice. I don't think
Martin
he was asked.
Jarvis.
The Man with the Golden Gun, Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, Ken Branagh.
That's quite a name to get.
Yeah, that's a big coup.
Octopussy and The Living Daylights and Other Stories is Tom Hiddleston and Lucy Fleming.
Ooh.
Simon Vance does a load of the John Gardner ones. I don't know
I'm not
Simon,
sure who Simon Vance is,
nor am I.
unfortunately. I'm sure he's very good, but I'm not familiar with him.
He seems to do all of them. I'm going through them here, and it's all
He
of
reads
them.
them all.
Yeah,
Martin Jarvis is perhaps. I don't know.
Andy
Listeners,
does.
if you listened, let us know.
And he does
But Chris
Raven
and Dave,
Bentley.
have you listened to the audio adventures on like Radio 4 and that, for example?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you gotta check them out. Oh my God, they're
Yeah.
so good.
So Simon Vance is the most prolific because he does all those as well. License Renewed, there's also a version done by Jeremy Northam. I don't know
Ooh.
which one I've got. Devil May Care is Jeremy Northam. Carte Blanche is Toby Stevens. Solo is Dominic West.
Ooh.
Trigger Mortis is David Oyelowo. With a Mind to Kill is Rory Kinnear. And
Nice.
that's all the ones
So,
that
a
working
wealth
here
of
again.
talent, a wealth
Yeah.
of talent when it comes to the audiobooks, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, you got to check out, literally, they're all, you can listen to them for free on YouTube. Check out the BBC radio dramas as well. Star-studded cast.
I will be doing that as well.
Yeah, no, they're really good. You can stick them on in the background whilst you're doing your homework or looking after the little one.
I'm surprised there's quite a few of them because there's one of the Exorcists as well.
Yes.
There is a if it's in my wish, I don't know if it's still in my wish list. There is a thing that years ago, quite often, the stars of major films would voice them for radio.
Yeah, they would. Yeah,
So
there'd be a radio
in my
adaptation.
list is Hollywood Playhouse, the Oscars collection, right? And the narrators include, I'll read you which ones in a minute, but narrator Ingrid Bergman,
Wow.
Bogart, Claudette Colbert, Gary Cooper, Bing Crosby,
Claudette
Bette
Colbert. Oh my
Davis.
gosh, really?
Yeah, Clark Gable, Greer Garson, Cary Grant, Sidney Greenstreet, Katharine Hepburn, William Holden, and it includes Casablanca, The Maltese Falcon, It's a Wonderful Life, All About Eve, Rebecca, It Happened One Night, and so on. There's loads of them.
I was going to say, I didn't know there was an adaptation of It Happened One Night.
Yeah, It Happened One Night, for anyone who's not seen it, it's a great film. And
Yeah, it's
yeah,
one of the
they
first
do.
Oscar winners, I think, wasn't it?
So yeah, radio dramas were quite common. And actually, I've done a few like Blu-ray disc reviews where there will be a version of it. I definitely remember there being one of the African Queen.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's
So.
not something that's so common anymore. But yeah, can highly recommend the Bond radio dramas for sure, because like, we have star-studded casts. I think Dr. No has like David Suchet or something like that is like known for playing Poirot. It's like, oh my gosh, and now he's playing Dr. No. But to have Martin Jarvis narrating the audiobooks, he sort of plays the narrator in the radio dramas, and also Ian Fleming sort of does any sort of narration there, so he's probably best known for that. But also, listeners, if you've not listened to any of the radio dramas, I'm just going to bang on about them because they are fantastic. Toby Stevens, he's a much better Bond than he was Gustav Graves. Oh my gosh. It's amazing. It really is. He's a fantastic radio Bond, and does the role a huge amount of justice. So highly recommend it for sure. And there's quite, I think, more, maybe all of them, most of them have been done. Probably like an hour, hour and a half. Won't take up too much of your time. Amazing. Yeah, definitely. And some are hilarious as well. And I think one of the earliest ones, 1990. 1991, 1990. Anyway, Michael Jackson from Doctor Who plays Bond, and also got Maxine Audley in it as well. Adaptation of You Only Live Twice, which is incredible. Portrayal of who's the ally in it? He's got the fake leg.
What, lighter?
No, in You Only Live Twice.
Oh, and You Only Live Twice.
Charles Grey's character. I can't remember his name.
Oh, sorry.
Dicko Henderson.
Dicko Henderson,
Yeah,
yeah.
is kind of he's very broad Australian character, lots of swears. It's quite sweary, so I'll warn you now that's slightly not safe for work. But yeah, just another plug for
But
the
again, who goes to work and sticks it on a Bluetooth speaker or something? They'll have it.
in case you've got an earbud, an earpod in, stick it in. But yeah, just to kind of recommend that as well. But yeah, check out obviously the continuation novels, audiobooks. I need to get onto the audiobook bandwagon for Bond because I've got a CD collection of the first four, and that's about
They
it,
are good.
unfortunately.
I do find you
And
have to
then get onto the radio
concentrate, though.
dramas for sure.
Sometimes with audiobooks, I realise I've not listened for the last 10 minutes. So with Patrick Stewart, I've been really, really like concentrating, and it's really rewarding. But yeah, it isn't. It's not as passive as you would think. You
No, you
have
have to get
to,
in, you get stuck into it, don't you?
yeah. You have to really. You have to work at it, though. It's a
Have to
bit of
pay
a
attention,
skill.
007.
Yeah.
But again, it's like it's the same issue I have with books though as well. Like sometimes you start reading and then before you know it, you've gone through like a couple of pages and you're just like, I don't think I absorbed
And
any
you
of
drift
that.
off.
Yeah. So I think it's depends on who you are, but I think I can have the same issues
At
really.
least you got Fleming with the books, because he said that he starts describing her nipples and all of a sudden you're back.
Describe her boobs and then be like, oh, all the
Do you
blokes would be
remember the
like,
naked? You remember the Naked Gun 2, where they all fell asleep listening to that environmental guy, and then like O.J. Simpson starts reading them like a sex scene from a
porn
Mills and
novel.
Boone book or something. They're all suddenly awake.
You'll get that sexy description and be like,
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of that scene in Austin Powers where like where he's like we where he's just got he's got married to what's her name Vanessa. And he's like, he's there like talking about, oh, you had cracking breasts, I knew I had to have you there and there. Or this guy, he just reminds, some of the stuff kind of reminds me of that, but obviously.
It is a little bit like that, unfortunately, is it, all the kind of like these tropes that dot these films. This is kind of where it all happened, really, and it's just, oh, there are some cringe inducing moments.
Is it your favorite book or one of your favorite books, Becca?
It's probably one of my favorites, not just in Bond, but probably like all time. I know that's really, really cheesy, but that's just as like a Bond nerd. But I think just in terms of like spy fiction and that as well. I mean, it's kind of there was the likes of Le Carré and Deighton and those sort of really sort of classic sort of spy novels, and also like Joseph Conrad and that, for example. It just kind of dials into the kind of like the fears and sort of themes and that at the time. I won't go on anymore, but I did have a couple of passages that I wanted to read out, but I won't now because we're going on for too long. But yeah, no, I would probably say it's up there with one of my favourite novels ever. But it was quite eclectic, really, quite an eclectic mix.
What about it specifically? Is it just or just like a personal thing of your? Do you think it's like, oh, it's just because I'm just connected to because of the bond or?
Yeah, well, I like, obviously, apart from the sexism and racism and obviously
And
towards
all that good
the
stuff.
Also I don't agree with that. That is really bad. But also I just come to looking at it through, through a sort of modern lens. But I think like there's a bit of conflation as well, obviously. I think of Fleming had like he's a really interesting character. I think has such quite interesting life. And you can see that, so much of Bond is almost there's a little bit of wish fulfillment there as well. A lot of his own characters infused with Bond. As we said at the top of the show, it's kind of pretty much almost like projecting what his kind of hopes and fears and what he really wanted to do and what to achieve and like the sort of glamorous life that he sort of lived. With just like a little bit of sort of spin on it as well. I think he writes the pace kind of whips along as well. I mean, some of the descriptions obviously Bond is a massive snob. So is Ian Fleming. You've got to have the right wine with your fish sort of thing and woe betide you if you drink red wine or a particular brand, if you smoke the wrong cigarettes or if you drive the wrong car, if you wear the wrong clothes. And that's a black mark forever against your name. Obviously one is a massive snob. I think sort of pacing is really quite well paced as well. The characters are really well rounded, sorry I can't speak. Obviously there are a lot of stereotypes. Especially there's a scene where Bond basically looks around the table and is basically kind of stereotype after stereotype and just think, oh, really? But I think in terms of, because I'm quite into like spy fiction as well, obviously getting into it through Bond,
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it quickly. I probably
there's
did
a bit in the
it.
There's a bit in the book where he's describing the people around the table, and it's like, it's something like, oh, the Oriental guy won't be very good because they're crap at cards and
yeah,
things
because
like
that,
that.
yeah. Where is it? I'll try and find it. No, anyway, yeah, it's literally in there
somewhere. He does go into a bit more description though, doesn't he? He goes like, well, they'll play, or they'll play safe, or and things like that, or. And then they'll do this the first half, but then like
Yeah,
God,
because they're French, they'll do this, or because he's American, he'll do that, and he'll behave in this way. So that's pretty bad. But also, I think I will read this little bit out. So it's also obviously very much kind of a novel of sort of the post-war kind of like obviously going into the Cold War and that as well. It still speaks a lot like to the politics at the time. So he says, oh, of course, he added, Mathis started to expostulate. Patriotism comes along and makes it seem fairly all right, but this country, right or wrong business, is getting a little out of date. Today we are fighting communism. Okay, if I'd been alive 50 years ago, the brand of conservatism we have today would be damn near called communism, and we should have been told to go and fight that. History is moving pretty quickly these days, and although heroes and villains keep on changing parts, that's still relevant today. So again,
yeah,
it's,
I absolutely agree.
It's very much kind of at once of its time and also very prescient as well. And I think that's kind of what keeps it fresh as well. I mean, that's why Bond is so popular, it's like Doctor Who, his face keeps changing every so often. Regeneration is the key. But I think that's why, because even though it's very much a time capsule, it just kind of it's kind of very updated in that sort of way as well. I mean, obviously. As we found out in the Bosnian era, lies, governments change, the lives stay the same. It's pretty much sort of the same thing, really, isn't it? But I think that's part of why it certainly
like,
appeals to me as
well.
Here
comes a new boss, just like the old.
Yes, yeah, to quote The Who, definitely. Here comes a new boss, same as the old boss. Pretty much the same. So, but yeah, lots of different factors, really, aside from the sexism and casual racism. And the violence. But yeah, no, I think it's pacey. I do like the description, a bit over the top in places, I know. And the paciness of it really kind of whips along. And it's just a great piece of spy fiction, really, which is a genre I'm quite interested in for sure. But they are very hit and miss, and it's not everyone isn't a winner. It's not like they're sort of consistently great. But there are a few that are kind of up there, that have been lauded as classics. But yeah, that's kind of like why it's one of my faves, really. I probably might rank it like fourth or fifth, or like in top five. I don't know. It changes all the time. So, like at the minute, like one of the other books that I am reading at the minute is one that I tend to go back, God, so many times a year. I'm kind of thinking this is probably my favorite book of all time. So, and sadly, it's not Casino Royale, unfortunately, but it is in the top five for sure. So it's a very long answer there. Sorry about that.
So in short, yes. I like it. It's among my favourites. My other favourites in no particular order were Moonraker. I really liked From Russia with Love. I liked Goldfinger. A lot of people don't like Goldfinger the book, but I really did. And I really liked On Her Majesty's Secret Service. But that was one of those where I was listening to the audiobook and not concentrating as well as I should. So I need to reevaluate that because it is my favourite of the films. My favourite of the books, I will say right now, was From Russia With Love, which is one of the most famous faithful adaptations. Apart from it not being Smersh, of course.
And didn't we get it make it into Kennedy's top 10? That was
it did.
That
it was made it into really his top 10 books. It's superb. It's a really good book. And it's it fleshes out all the bits you'd want fleshed out in a book, but it's still really faithful. So it's very good. But we'll see how we get on with them as we go through. The next one, as I say, Live and Let Die. A lot of the early books and a lot of the Connery films are very faithful, but one or two aren't. And Live and Let Die is not super faithful. It's got some of the same stuff. Okay. So as for social media, you can find me at the Pasty Kid 1976 on Twitter.
Hey, you can find me at Cinematronics. You can find all the old episodes at I forgot where on Podbean. I forgot where we were there.
We're everywhere, to be fair.
Yeah, but if you just Google it, you'll come across something or on your podcast place of interest.
On your podcatcher.
Yes.
On your podcatcher of choice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so you find us everywhere. Do you expect us to talk on Twitter, X, whatever it's called these days? Expect us to talk. You can drop us an email, expectustalk@gmail.com. You can always, wherever you are on the platform, podcatcher of choice, Spotify, YouTube, just type in Do You Expect Us to Talk, you can find us there generally. Don't forget, wherever platform, where you can find us, sorry.
You won't find me at, like, the knickers in, like, Anne Summers or something. We're not
in the lingerie department.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll find you in the 00 section. So whichever platform you're listening to us on, don't forget to give us a glowing 5-star review and hopefully leave us a little review where you can as well. And also, if you have to be on social media, why not just do a status update? Oh, I'm listening to Do You Expect Us to Talk? And post that as a tweet, as an update, just to, you know, let your friends know what you're listening to. Who knows, they might listen to us as well. Whatever platform you're listening on, hope us to give us a glowing 5-star review, helped us to rank a little bit higher in the listings and attract more lovely listeners like yourself.
So we are coming up to a series Becca has wanted to do since day one of this podcast. Becca, introduce
apart
it
from, apart from Bond
apart from Bond yeah this is your series, designed as you wish and whatever you're gonna take us through as we go through it. We've got a list of.
Hang on, so what, we're doing the Human Centipede?
Yeah.
Yes, how did you know?
Yeah. That's why Becca's always saying you mustn't go ass to mouth. Bit of a catchphrase of hers.
I think that's probably gonna be one series that you get Charlie on to replace me, because I'll be like, that's one of those films like I'm only ever gonna see once.
I've not seen it and I'm not going to.
It's like Requiem for a Dream. I've seen that film once and it was amazing, it was fantastic, but harrowing, but I'm never gonna see it again.
Christ, the audiobook of Bleak House is 43 hours long.
Fucking hell, excuse my language.
So I was just looking because the Pickwick Papers was narrated by Rory Kinnear as well.
Well, but anyway. They are epic tones.
Dracula's quite long. But yeah, that's done as like your journal blog, so.
Okay.
Yeah. How does Frankenstein compare? Because that's kind of letters within letters within letters. Like,
I don't know, I've not listened to it.
The Audible edition is actually only 15 hours and 27 minutes. It's not so bad. It's not that bad.
Listeners, what's the longest audiobook you've ever listened to? Or indeed, what's the longest book you've ever read? I mean, does War and Peace or Les Miserables equate to hours upon hours upon hours? What's the longest? And by contrast, what's the shortest?
There's a few different versions of Dracula, actually, and they're slightly different lengths depending on who's reading them. Greg Wise did a version at 18 hours. Mm.
Does Gary Oldman do one? Please tell me he does.
Some of them are several different readers.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah, I must say, okay. I've listened to a few.
Mark Gatiss did a version.
Yes. I remember when I was at school, because I got into the X-Files when I was at school, and I read a couple of those audiobooks. They were really good. But apart from that, I haven't got anything against it. I'm not a massive snob. I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, if you listen to an audiobook, you haven't really read the book. You have, it's fine. I haven't jumped on that bandwagon for whatever reason.
When I used to go out and
walk, so I need to get on it.
I used to at the gym. The trouble is, I've got so many bloody podcasts, I quite often don't get to the books. But yeah.
I think that's probably my problem.
Yeah. All right. So tell us so about much our next... media. Tell us about our next series.
So yes, at long last, you're going to embark with me on my vanity journey. as we finally get round to the Master of Suspense, Alfred Hitchcock, I've selected a handful of British films and perhaps probably all of his American output. But we'll do the list.
We'll do the list as we go through.
We'll do this as we go along. No sort of real surprises. And what I'd also like to do is maybe, I haven't finalised anything just yet. Top secret. But I've also kind of, I'd like to invite a few guests on the show as well. Sort of like friends of the podcast and people that, you know, that kind of we're sort of in touch with, who have like a connection to the films, or have like an invested interest, for example. And again, they'll be revealed near the time.
Yeah, and one thing I will say is Becca sent us the list, not a finalised version, because she did say three or four that are on there might come off, because it's, if we do the list as it is at the moment, it'll actually be the longest season
we've ever done.
In terms of number of films, not necessarily episodes, because, I mean, Bond was 37 episodes, and then we've done commentaries ever since, so probably more like 60-something, but and now a book. But but a few may be cut, but what I did is just went and had a look where I would find them all. So, for example, I have the Masterpiece Collection, which is mainly American, although Frenzy's in it. And I wrote Masterpiece Collection next to the ones I have. And, you know, Amazon, where I had to buy a few of them and so on, or rent or whatever. Quite a lot of the earliest entries are free on YouTube. Okay, so the film Becca is about to introduce in a minute is on YouTube, and as are some of the very early ones. Okay, which means, Becca,
do you expect to talk or return with a review of The Lodger, the story of the London Fog,